Bookie Beatdown coming at you. Paul Shaughnessy, Cody Saftick. Breaking down UFC Vegas 107 from the Apex. They took a week off and they're like, welcome back, guys. We're going to the Apex. Doesn't matter for us. We're breaking down what? Brave CF this week. There's a 17-fight Cage Warriors card. May dabble in a little bit of BKB. There's two Canadian regional cards that Cody is quite the expert at. So the week's just starting over here at Bookie Beatdown. But, you know, for us, for our YouTube fans, appreciate you guys coming over from Mayo's channel. Hope you guys support Dan and MadLab over on their channel. You can watch both. There's no sort of, rivalry or anger or anything like that. We just wanted to, bet on ourselves, do our own thing. But we appreciate you guys all coming over to here. Cody, do you have anything to say before we get into this, this massive main event between Blanchfield and Barber?
So massive. Women's MMA coming at you. Main event action. Yeah, listen, we were in the Apex 2 weeks ago and we cleaned up. So I don't care what kind of card it is. If we can hit some value, I'm all for it. But you're right. It's kind of low on name fighters, to say the least. But yeah, let's break it down. 11 fights in total. So we'll try to find the best gem spots.
All right. We got the main event. Macy Barber taking on Aaron Blanchfield. Minus 240 for Blanchfield at this point. The comeback on Macy, the future Barber, plus 205. Who you got here, brother?
Yeah, I'm going to take Macy Barber. Like, it feels like the smart play is clearly Aaron Blanchfield. I'm not disagreeing with her status as the favorite. She's gone five rounds in her last two fights. That includes a five-round decision loss to Manil Fiorot, who just fought for a title. And she also beat Rose Namajunas in a five-round decision, who's a former champion. So, at this point, she's a year younger. She's kind of accrued some bigger experience. The fighters that she is competing against in the UFC are vastly better than the fighters that Macy Barber is fighting in the UFC. So she's got better jiu-jitsu. She's got a better ground game. Numbers-wise, I wouldn't say her striking is great, but she's able to throw up volume, and she's able to largely hang on the feet with far superior strikers and not get into too much trouble. So I think she probably has Macy Barber's number everywhere. If not, she's very competitive in all the areas versus Macy Barber. So why take Barber? Is it just CF dot model? Or are we just going with chick fight, dog or pass? Like, is that the whole angle here? But really, for me, it's for Macy Barber. You've never seen her in a five-round fight. And I honestly just think, like, that's the key to her. Like, she's massively underwhelming in a lot of these fights. I am not going to disagree. But here's a girl that jumps into the UFC. She's, like, 21 years old. She's very young. She's just hammering this point where she's going to be the youngest UFC champion. And she's going to be the even younger than John Jones, and she's going to be a champion quicker than John Jones. It possibly all that stuff went to her head. She got a little too far ahead of herself, but it was a humbling experience. And now she's only 27 years old. I do feel like she's starting to find a rhythm and put things together. When look back at some of her best performances, she finishes, goes out there and gets a solid first round, 3 minutes into the fight, TK over Jillian Robertson. Jillian Robertson never been knocked out other than a Macy Barber. Jillian Robertson, very hard to put away. Other than Macy Barber smashes her. Her fight with Alexa Grasso, she loses the first two rounds. In the third round, she doubles up Grasso in the significant strikes. She takes down Grasso twice, but it's only a three-round fight. So she loses that third round, and she wins the third round, but she loses the fight. Fight with Miranda Maverick, everyone says it was a robbery. But the third round, by far Barber's best round, in which she wins it. Her fight with Lee, terrible fight. Third round is where she comes alive. Even her last two fights, Amanda Hibas, she loses the first round to Hibas. Doesn't look all that good, got taken down twice. The second round, it's like she's just marching her forward. She's highly aggressive. She trains at altitude. She's been training at altitude for the vast majority of her career. She's built for five rounds. I would suggest she's a very slow starter. And then the longer these fights go, she really starts to build some of that momentum. Now you think about volume. Okay, well, Blanchfield just landed over 100 significant strikes in her last two fights. And Barbara's been, for the most part, a little bit lower than that. But again, Barbara young and getting better. Two fights back against Hibas, she lands 81 significant strikes through a round and a half, not quite a round and a half, but
that was violent.
Eight minutes and 42 seconds, she landed 81 significant strikes. As Paul mentioned, very violent, loses the first round, and then just says, YOLO, I'm going to beat this girl up, and does exactly that. The next fight with Caitlin Samara, former Caitlin Chookagian, someone that's very hard to put numbers on because she's fleet-footed and very agile. Well, she goes ahead and lands 84, and that's also just a three-round fight. So in both of those instances, if the thing goes 4 and 5, she too will eclipse 100 significant strikes. You've never seen her do it in her career. but she's never fought five rounds before. So in terms of how does she match up with Blanchfield, I do feel she's got more power than Blanchfield. She's got, you know, those hard-hitting techniques, like those, you know, inside elbows, good knees to the body. She presses forward. Blanchfield's only rocking a 31% takedown accuracy. So taking down, I mean, again, when Blanchfield's at her worst, she went 0 for 14 taking down Taylor Santos. She only has a 31% accuracy. So if she can't take Barber down, she's forced to strike. This thing's close. If she does take Barber down, I've seen Barber taken down quite a few times. She's got a pretty good get-up game. She doesn't accept positions. There's usually a lot of scrambles. She can just keep this fight competitive with high volume, lots of scrambles, takedowns maybe mixed in on both sides. It's going to be close and competitive. And because one of them is a minus 225 favorite, I'm going to take the other side and go with Macy Barber and try to hit a little bit of value out of it. But I can fully agree, closely contested fight, maybe even a split decision, Paul. But I got to go CF dot model for this main event on a personal note.
It's like you're reading my mail, bro.
Oh, you're in on it. Okay, let's go.
I understand, you know, Blanchfield's good. And she's been in there with some of the division's elites. Like, there's no disrespect here. And there is a little bit of concern. One thing I will say that I did come across is I forget the name of the virus or disease. Like, Macy's been off for a while because she had some sort of, like, virus. It's a little bit troubling. But I just think Macy's just so damn physical. And the longer this fight kind of plays out. And yeah, I saw kind of the same things with her cardio. It's just like she's a bit of a slow starter. Maybe she ends up being a better, you know, live bet once the wheels start moving. And then you got to, you know, the early takedown could be there for Blanchfield. But like Blanchfield's just not so physical. I don't think she's going to be able to take down, hold down, control, get to the neck. It's not. It's definitely on the table, but we haven't seen anybody in a long time be able to do that to Macy. But yeah, I feel like the Serminara fight was a classic example. When I was watching that one, I'm like, man, her best rounds round three. She's just turning up the volume. It's just like that was like my last final note that I made. It's just like, yeah, round three is her best, so it's like it doesn't look like she's gonna be slowing down. If this was a pick'em, I'd probably go with Blanchfield, but you're giving me a plus 205 underdog in Macy Barber. Don't threaten me with a good time. So we are on the same page in the main event. Macy Barber is the pick. Moving on down, we got Matheus Gamrot taking on Ludovic Klein. Gamrot a minus 150 favorite. Klein could be had for plus 130. Gamrot's a little bit long in the tooth at this point. There are a little bit concerns about like his game. He's never been great at like actually holding people down. Gets a hell of a lot of takedowns. Like you see it over the course of his career. So, you know, five versus Hooker, but like Hooker would like threaten with the guillotine and kind of like use that to scramble back to his feet. RDA, I mean, RDA, that's always been the path against him. Just like spam takedowns, he'll get back up, but it's like he can't really stop them. The Fazayev fight, he was actually competitive in that fight, in the striking range. And then obviously there was the leg injury, everything like that. We've seen Gamrot rocked a little bit, everything like that. But what troubles me with, and it's a numbers play again. It's like minus 150, 60% of the time, but Klein's made a lot of improvements, don't get me wrong, but I did go back and watch some of the lowlights of his career. And it was like Nate Landwehr, where there was not really a takedown there. That was actually more of a Nate grabbed his neck standing and dragged it to the mat. But just the fact that that happened, I think leaves a Gamrot stub kind of on the table here. And round three, this fight versus Jai Herbert, and that was only in 2023. Jai Herbert's not much of a wrestler whatsoever. Jai Herbert was able to get a takedown and get like 2 minutes of top control. Maybe a lot of, you know, Ludovic Klein's, you know, takedown defense, everything like that recently. And it seems like he's got improvements in that realm or because nobody's really tried. And maybe, just maybe for once in Gamrot's, you know, run here, he's able to actually get a takedown and like set up a submission or like get a little bit of control time. I don't know for sure. You know, we know what he's going to do when he goes out there, but I've been circling the wagons, haven't clicked it yet, but interesting. Gamrot sub like plus 900 out on the market. The early action opened up at 900, dropped down to plus 700. I wrote down plus 800. It was my break, and I'm trying to be, you know, I'm trying to be diligent with the number that I set in my head. Somebody else will probably open it later in the week unless it moves. But Gamrot sub, I'll have a small little sprinkle, and Gamrot's the pick for me. What about you?
Yeah, I got Gamrot as well, but I fully understand and I agree. 34 years old, lots of wear and tear, tons of fights at the highest level. He's starting to miss a little something-something. Now, maybe it's his inability to hold his opponents down once he does complete the takedowns. Maybe it's his low-volume standing. Maybe it's just, like, the compiling injuries or his lack of interest. But, like, when Gamrot came to the UFC, it's like, this guy's capable of winning the title. Gamrot's first few years in the UFC, it was like, all right, he's not going to be a champion, but he can hang with anybody in the top five. Gamrot now is starting to get into this place in his career where not like he's on some big losing streak, but he's certainly becoming less and less serviceable as time goes on. So it's important for him to go out there and get a victory. What I would say, though, is when you look at Ludovic Klein, a former featherweight, is that he's not really big for the weight class. And when you look at the guy like Matheus Gamrot that relies on taking guys down, holding them down, he fights a lot of big guys. Dan Hooker is huge. In what world does Dan Hooker ever make 145? Well, I think he did like, I don't know, 10 years ago, but not anymore. Rafael Dos Anjos, the guy was fighting at welterweight against all the best welterweights. Fazayev's only an inch taller than Ludovic Klein, but all the same, he's like a much more dense guy. Jalen Turner, he would die. He'd even quite literally die in an attempt to make 145 pounds. So to me, it's like his game is probably a lot more better suited to take on a guy like Ludovic Klein, where he might have some success if he can get those takedowns. The other thing is that Gamrot's low volume standing, like his technical boxing isn't bad, but he's mostly one and done, two punches at a time, not high on volume. Well, that's not so bad against Ludovic Klein, who's low volume guy himself. Got a nasty left high kick, you know, all around athletic guy. Been taking his strength and conditioning real serious last few fights, has Ludovic Klein. But physically, you're getting matched by Gamrot, who's as physical as anybody. But also, how do you outmatch his low volume? Throw more. But he fights Roosevelt Roberts. He lands 45 significant strikes over an absolute cast-off that cannot cut it in the UFC, 45. Thiago Moises, not that that one's bad, but Thiago Moises, we just saw absolutely get pulverized by Jared Gordon. He lands 56. It's low. Him versus AJ Cunningham, that's a first-round fight where he absolutely punches him out. But even prior to that, the Ignacio Bahamondes fight, 56 significant strikes landed over 15. And Bahamondes lands high numbers versus everybody. So, yeah, I think that this probably thing is going to be low output on the feet. Pretty competitive on the ground. Gamrot should be the one getting these takedowns. And if you have low volume, close striking exchanges, plus one guy's the one mixing in the takedowns, then Gamrot should edge this thing. Other thing with Ludovic Klein, not only is he a former featherweight, I get it. People might also say if they're super hardcore, Gamrot's a former featherweight too. That's true. But he damn near almost died making that weight class. And that was 12 years ago. Anyways, back to the point being, Roosevelt Roberts in your last fight, cut twice from the UFC, non-factor, non-wrestler. Thiago Moises cannot wrestle, and he's a journeyman at this point. AJ Cunningham should have never been signed to the roster, most certainly not a wrestler. Ignacio Bahamondes, that my boy. But Ignacio's not wrestling. He's like 6'3" in the weight class. Jai Herbert, not a wrestler, and Paul nailed this one. In that third round, it's like he loses the fight to Jai Herbert, for the record. Should have been a 29-28 across the board. Jai Herbert loses a point. Super greasy, because why was there not a warning? Anyways, loses a point. That's what ends up being a draw, but Jai Herbert gives him everything he can handle. Anyways, my point being is, at least over his last six fights, is that he's not fought any guys that specifically were going to come in and wrestle, and he didn't fight anybody that would be considered a pure grappler. Whereas Gamrot, yeah, he can strike a little bit too. Like, once he gets in on your hips, you're going for a ride. And he's, like you mentioned, he's cool with doing it 8, 9, 10, 11 times if need be. Three-round fight, gas your checkout. I know he's going to let me down at some point. I bet against him against Dan Hooker, so he doesn't owe me anything. He didn't let me down. But I bet against him because I can see the writing's on the wall. And now that same guy, I need to have now put faith in. But shit, Gamrot's my guy. Love that kind of style that he fights, and I think he's got at least one more in him. Check out anything on social media. He's getting top reps at American Top Team with all the best guys. He looks in phenomenal shape. The guys that have been training with him, they're going out and competing, and they're all getting the wins too, right? I mean, when you're at the highest level and you're getting that special attention, you're going to be in shape. And I got to have faith that Gamrot's in shape for this one. So sign me up. I'm on the same page.
All right. We move on down. We've got Ramiz Brahimi taking on Billy Ray Goff. Both these guys were supposed to have different opponents. but visa issues, everything like that. They're meeting each other. I don't know if they're going to stay in this slot on this card, but let's face it, doesn't really matter what slot they go into on this card. Goff is a minus 340 favorite. The comeback, I'm probably my plus 265. Your thoughts?
Well, okay, so it's a fight that just kind of got put together last minute because of two separate visa issues on the card. So initially, it's supposed to be Obon Elliott versus Ramiz Brahimaj. And Obon Elliott would have absolutely pulverized him. Or killed him. That would have been the free money of the week. The Seung-Hyo Kung fight, it gets canceled with Billy Ray Goff. Visa issues. And so now they've just decided, well, then you guys both need an opponent. It's both in the same weight class. Why don't you guys just fight each other? So definitively to say who I love, it's a little bit hard. And the only reason I say that is I got Billy Ray. I think Goff beats him. I've never been a Brahimaj guy, but this line feels a little wide. Brahimaj at his best, he's like an IBJJF blue belt world champion, won a world championship as a blue belt, which is no knock on him. I'm pretty sure like Benil Dariush won a world championship at purple belt, right? Like that you go on to be a black belt and you go on to be a great black belt. So there's no knock on Brahimaj, but grappling is his strong suit. His wrestling, I've never been very fond of it. I think he's a little bit slow, a little bit stiff, a little bit robotic. And he telegraphs the shot, too. His striking is super stiff. I mean, you've seen him get boxed up a number of times. Of course, his ear physically fell off once. His last fight with Mickey Gall, although he did knock out Mickey Gall, I did not think he looked particularly good early, and he wasn't even attempting takedowns. So, yeah, part of me is just not in on Brahimaj. I think Billy probably just backs him up. He's throws a lot more output. He's a lot more violent of a striker. Probably getting his face put a pressure on him, catch him at some point. It's that I haven't spent enough time to definitively say, there's no way Ramiz takes this guy down. And if Ramiz can take this guy down and Ken can control some of these grappling spots, Billy's kind of a glass cannon himself, man. Like, he can finish you, but I don't think his durability is all that good. He's not huge for the weight class. It's a fight that just got shifted together, you know, essentially days before the card because of a couple of visa issues to the respective opponents. So, yeah, if it was near even money, I'm on Billy. If it's minus 160 Billy, I'm on Billy. Minus 340 Billy. Still my pick. Still the guy I'm going with. But check out the weigh-in show and the prop show, and I'll have a much better, more definitive answer for you come that, because I'll really be able to analyze how their styles clash against each other's opposing, you know, skills.
The interesting thing with Brahimaj, outside of the ear damn well exploding against Max Griffin, never been knocked out. Court McGee knocked him down, though. Like, there's just, like, it's one of those, there's such weird vibes about certain things. It's just like, well, he never been knocked out. But Court McGee in 2022 knocked you down? Maybe this is the time that he finally gets knocked down. But there was just, like, some weird stuff when I was going through, you know, these guys' records. And I see a lot of the same things as you. I think Billy just lands more, dominates. Watching that Thembo Garimbo fight,
that was the red flag. Yeah,
100%.
Because Thembo doesn't know what he's doing, and he took you down four times in a grapple gym.
And you're
supposed to be a grappler. So.
Thembo literally 10 minutes of control time. Literally, yeah, just hurt. Stuck to this one. Everyone thought there was gonna be unders, and Themba's gonna kill this guy. And it's just like Themba's like, no, I'll just take him down and hang out in his guard for the vast majority of the fight. Three significant strikes landed. Like, it's hard to win fights when you're doing that.
You're right.
I'm with you. I'm the pick is Billy Ray Goff. I just don't know. You know, we break down so much stuff every single week that it's just like, do I really need Billy Ray Goff on tickets and parlays and stuff this week? Probably not. The greasy part of me was considering, like, a Goff by decision, but it's like plus 225. Like, it's not that clean considering, you know, I know Brahimaj hasn't got, like, I thought it was going to be a lot more, and I thought, like, unders were going to be getting, you know, because this is like the over under is like minus over 1.5 is minus 165. So it's like I expected it to be a lot more generous than plus 225 when props were opening. So just letting that kind of sit there. Goff is the pick. Official pick is Goff by decision. But yeah, not nearly generous enough on the prop market there. Dustin Jacoby takes on Bruno Lopez. My little fluff there was me. Look at the time codes. Look at the time codes. Middle, trying to remember the time codes. Paul, you gotta remember the time codes. We're learning on the job here. Yeah, Dustin Jacoby a -185 favorite. Bruno Lopez can be had for +160. That we cashed on Bruno Lopez against Gadzi Izulov, but I watched that fight. I think I was. I don't know where I was. I wasn't anywhere around for that fight. Like, I wasn't actually able to watch it, I don't think, in the flesh. And so I saw, like, the results, and I, you know, people were excited and stuff like that. Going back and watching that fight, woof, what a stinker. But a stinker that we won. I just don't know if I trust Bruno Lopez. It worked against Gadzi Izulov, but it's like he wasn't really controlling for very much period of time. That Brenton Ribeiro KO loss still kind of looms large. He got knocked down on that Contender Series fight that he ended up getting the job in the UFC against Michael Sazniani before he, you know, he got the finish himself. But like he was knocked down clean. It's like both of these guys are pretty chinny, pretty unreliable. It ain't pretty, but Dustin Jacoby is the side for me, and Dustin Jacoby by knockout is how I see this one shaking out. It's if Lopez isn't able to like hold him down, control him, it's just like I think Jacoby just won on the money line. It's going to land more volume over the course of 15 minutes too. Watching Lopez's fights and even like his LFA fights, it's like I don't really see somebody who has like dynamite in his hands. It doesn't really stress me out that Jacoby, I know, is a little bit chinny. But I just don't see Lopez being the guy to put him out. So Jacoby is the pick. +170 doesn't seem the most generous, but we'll see later in the week. It hasn't moved, so we'll see if we can get a little bit better than that. But that's where I'm at on this one. What about you?
Yeah, like, maybe it feels like Dustin Jacoby's chinny, but he's not chinny. He's been knocked out once in the UFC, and he's had, like, 18 fights in the UFC. Those fights include, yeah, Dominic Reyes knocked him out. But Dominic Reyes is to John Jones what Gleison Tibau is to Khabib Nurmagomedov. The guy probably beat him. So I'll give him a pass on that one. He loses to Alonzo Menifield. I don't love that, but Alonzo's a big former football player. Azat Mirzakhanov, the kids on the streets call him Murdakhanov because he usually hurts people. Khalil Roundtree, that ain't easy to do. And to be honest with you, I thought he won the Khalil Roundtree fight. Yeah, I mean, Dustin Jacoby has been knocked down plenty of times, but he's got a lot of heart. He gets back up, tons of experience. It's that similar-ish to other fights that we'll discuss on the card. It's like, you know, Matheus Gamrot, 34. At what point is he going to let me down? Jacoby at 37, at what point is he going to show you that regression, let you down? He's already slower than he used to be. He already maybe doesn't take a punch as well as he used to. But I think in this particular matchup, he should still have enough in the tank to take out Bruno Lopez. Pretty well all the guys that Justin Jacoby fights are the top contenders. You know, Vitor Petrino, whom he knocked out his last time out, he still showed that he could go with a much younger, much more explosive, faster, heavy power-punching opponent. He can still navigate the waters on guys like that because he's a technical striker. Now, when you chase a Justin Jacoby by knockout, yes, he did knock out Petrino, but it just materialized on its own naturally. Like, he was trying to just outpoint him and do his thing. The knockout just ended up presenting itself and took it. But you could see him going back to that style and just using his technical abilities, pumping out that jab, using those leg kicks. Jacoby, another guy that even though he's 37, a little bit older, a little bit slower, he's always trained at altitude. And for the most part, look at some of these fights where he's putting up 80, 90, 100 significant strikes, his volume generally does check out. So, you know, you got the experience, you know, you got the back class, you know, you got the ability to put the volume out, you know, you got the cardio, you know, you got all those variables. And with Bruno Lopez, you know, you already knocked all these points. He lost to Brenton Ribeiro, which I know Brenton's doing his thing, but like, I don't rate this at all. And then, and then the win over Salaziani, he comes off the mat. Salaziani looks just unbelievably bad in the fight and then flat gasses out, which allows him to take over. His fight with Magomed Gadziyazulov, as Paul mentioned before, Gadziyazulov can't really strike at all. And yet Bruno's relying on these five takedowns because he don't want to strike with the guy. No. You know, he gets desperate by the end of the fight to just cling on to him and kill the clock off, which is certainly a bad sign. In both those cases, he's not presented with resistance, and he's presented with fighters that tire the longer they go. With Jacoby can stuff takedowns. He can get back up. He's fought in guys like Ion Cutelaba, who I think took him down like 9 times, but he kept getting up against Ion. Well, what do you think he's going to do against a guy like Bruno Lopez now? Brazilians are tricky to bet against because sometimes they're on a cycle and sometimes they're not. Sometimes they just look way better than you really do expect them to look. And I can see Bruno just catching Jacoby, who's on the way out, and Bruno's feeling good in that moment. And it's the fight game. I could see it happening. But in terms of the wise pick, the smart pick, who wins more often than not? Yeah, Dustin Jacoby for me too.
All right, moving on down. We've got Zachary Reese taking on Dusko Todorovic. Zachary Reese, a -235 favorite, I believe.
His money is swinging. He was like
-235 favorite comeback on Dusko can be had for +200. I mean, I said in the Discord with the boys, I posted a picture of Dusko versus Jordan Wright in round one. Just like, it is hard to get mounted by Jordan Wright and still have your job like multiple years later. Like, he came back, won that fight, but it's just like, Chen has always been a big time problem, of course. I don't know what Dusko's grade. I made the joke too that like Dusko's gonna go over to like not FCR but FNC, that Serbian promotion. He's gonna go over there like after he gets cut after losing this fight, and he's gonna get absolutely, he's gonna get his head knocked off and then just like kind of go off into the abyss. I'm not sure what Dusko brings to the table. Zachary's, it feels kind of grimy, you know, backing him at this number.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't pull a trigger on Dusko Todorovic. I'm sorry, it's Zachary's for me. You know, some of those like markets that you get like the gone in 60 seconds. Like the gun. I know you love overs. You like all of that type of stuff.
I don't know if this thing's going over, man.
No, I know. But like some books offer like these gone in 60 seconds, like gone in 1 minute. Zachary Reese, even against like Medina, he comes out and he is swinging, which is the wrong opponent to do that against unless you're a Tiba Goche. You're just gassing yourself for the sake of it. Unless you've got just, you know, God-given absolute nuclear power. But one of those like gone in 60 seconds props could be the spicy way for me to get involved in this. Because I looked through some of the other props, like Reese by KO is +105. Like, I don't really want to back Reese, but it's like, I feel like I have to. There's no way I'm betting Dusko Todorovic this week. So Reese for me, what will you?
Yeah, so when this fight actually first got announced, I'm like, okay, this is going to be greasy, and I can see it blowing up in my face, but I am going to load up on Zachary. Stylistically, I think he smokes Dusko Todorovic. And the reason why I think I'm going to get a good price on it, before I end up seeing the line, the reason I thought I'd get a good price on it is that they're both untrustworthy. Like, Dusko can't take a punch, but Reese has proven in the same breath that seems to be his kryptonite as well. Whether it's bad luck, like Cody Brundage slams him on his head from a triangle position, or obviously, his last fight where he got clipped pretty good against Bakoev. Yeah, he would be considered untrustworthy. He's like 6'3", big, long guy that's hyper-aggressive and has a very active submission game, but can get knocked out while being off his back and get knocked out while standing up, tends to leave himself vulnerable. Dusko's got zero defense, right? But the guy can grapple a little bit himself. His cardio, although not great, could be better than Reese's, and his striking serviceable enough that he could catch a chinny guy in Reese. So I'm expecting to get a much better number, and then when I get that number, I think Zach Reese kills this guy. So I'm going to load up and I'll get good value. But now it's like Zach Reese -235. Paul would have to switch the tab, but like, I feel like it was a higher number than that not even so long ago. So maybe the number's starting to come down and maybe you can wait on it a little bit longer and get a Zach Reese at a much better price. But I honestly will be, I'll just make an excuse for him. I think he's just had bad luck. That's it. When you watch him on the regional scene, it's like, this guy's very dynamic. He's very good off his back, long legs, throw up triangles, can throw up arm bars. When he fought Eli Aronov on the Contender Series, Eli's like a big, bulky, likely on steroids, jacked up guy. And like, Reese just, gets the fight to the ground and then immediately gets taken down, but immediately throws up that arm and grabs it. It's like, this guy's fast and he's explosive in a weight class where guys are usually a little bit clunky and a step behind. I lost money when he got powerbombed on his head by Cody Brundage. Dems to breaks, smashes Julian Marquez. Jose Medina, I think he fought a good fight, had to conserve himself once he realized his Bolivian guy wasn't going down quietly. But then he runs into Asmat Bakoev, who also knocks him out. So the optics don't look great, but again, he's long, he's athletic, he's still only, he's 8-2, you know, he's had 10 pro fights. So even though he's 31 years old, because it's a heavier weight class, he will continue to make strides, he will continue to get better. He's just got to protect himself. And then for Dusko Todorovic, you could look at the right fight and say, geez, he can barely grapple against a guy like the Beverly Hills Ninja. It's probably not going to go for him, but more so than that, you know, Mansoor Malik, probably a really good prospect, but just absolutely has his way with him. Yeah, pretty bad. The Christian Leroy Duncan fight, he hurts his knee, but again, it's like, I don't know. There's just a lot of bad cases. Chidi and Jaquani, the elbow is a nasty elbow, but again, happened in the first round. His fight with Puene Soriano, that one's especially difficult because Puene at middleweight is really not any good at 170. Holy crap.
You can hit hard, though, and that's like all you really need against Puna.
And when when you watch that fight, it's like everything he throws lands, and everything that lands just immediately buckles him. Like, he gets credit for a couple knockdowns and eventually a knockout, but even just, like, short shots that don't put him down just cause his legs to go. Like, he's just so disoriented the entire time. I don't know. Listen, it's such an unforgiving game that you're a prized fighter. You're playing punchy kicky. Your opponent's like 6'4" with a 79-inch reach, and you can't take a punch. You know, it's like, it's just a recipe for disaster. This thing stays standing. Yeah, I think Reese probably just catches him with something. If the fight hits the ground, I think that's where Reese shines, which is much better grappler, catches him with a submission, or better yet, get on top and just smash him with some ground and pound. If the submission presents itself, take it. If not, take the TKO. But I feel like Reese probably goes out there and handles business. So the line is scaring me off. The volatility or the potential volatility of the fight is also scaring me off. So I can't put a guy like Zach Reese on my top line. I can't put a guy like that on my second line. But damn right, I'm using him. And I think he wins. But I can fully admit that this thing could get hairy because he's not the most trustworthy guy going.
No, but I mean, Jordan Wright, Mackie Bedolo, who was always just way undersized, let's face it.
Coconut bombs.
Daquan Townsend and Teddy Ash. Yeah. Like, that's got to be one of the most cupcake matchmaking to keep you in the octagon for like 6 years that we've ever seen. I'll miss Dusko Todorovic when he's gone, but hopefully he's gone in 60 seconds because I'll be looking out at one of my books has those props.
And they're always
stupidly priced. They're fun. It's quite the sweat. Real degen. Maybe not the sharpest, you know, unit players, that type of thing. But sometimes you want to bet for fun. But honestly, like, a Reese round one ticket is probably how I'm going about this. Even though it's chalky, I just don't trust Dusko to last 5 minutes against too many people.
Fairway opponent, right?
All right, we got Alan Nascimento taking on Jafel Filho. Alan Nascimento, a -155 favor. Filho can be added for +135. We got here, bud.
Yeah, this is another tight one, right? So essentially what they're doing is they're like, okay, we got Jafel Filho, and this guy's a problem on the ground. And we're going to go ahead and pair him with Alan Nascimento, who's really, really, really good on the ground. And largely it's going to negate each other, itself. So are we getting a boring fight? Are we getting a tightly contested split decision type fight? As far as who's got the better straight-up jiu-jitsu, Alan Nascimento. Alan Nascimento has better jiu-jitsu. Pretty confident in that. Herein lies the problem, Paul. He's 33 years old now, which at 125 pounds, death sentence is coming close. A lot of guys at that age at 125 are just not going to be themselves. But him in particular, right? I mean, since he's signed with the UFC, which he had a pile of fights canceled on the regional scene, but we don't know what those were canceled for. Since he's been in the UFC, he gets a fight booked with Tim Elliott. So he beats Carlos Hernandez, rear naked choke. That's 2 years ago. It's 2.5 years ago he beats Carlos Hernandez. They book him against Tim Elliott. He pulls out. They rebook him in December of 2023 against Sumedergi. He pulls out. They rebook him against Jafel Filho in August of 2024, and Nascimento is sick and he pulls out. And then his last time out against Asu Almobayev, Almobayev pulls out, but then Nascimento elected not to take a replacement opponent and just decided to sit out. So 33 is not old. Old for flyweight, sure, but in general, it's not old to be having health problems. But you don't know if these weight cuts are seriously hurting him. You don't know if his body's just thrashed and ravished up from injuries. The fact is that he hasn't fought in 2.5 years, and he's pulled out of at least 3 fights due to illness or injury. So I don't think you really, you know, you can really count on him. You can't have any trust there. Now, if he's fighting a guy that absolutely cannot grapple and Alan Nascimento can just essentially pull guard on the guy and win, yeah, great, we'll do that. But in this case against Jafel Filho, it's probably not on the case. Jafel Filho is, I think he's 32, so it's not like he's like marginally younger by any stretch of the imagination. It's just he seems like he's pretty wily. His fight against Muhammad Makhachev in the UFC, he got taken down 4 times, kept getting back up, kept scrambling. The third round, he catches Makhachev in an knee bar. The knee bar allegedly cracks Makhachev's knee, and then Makhachev ends up taking his back and subbing him. It was a pretty wild third round when you think about it. But it was like a damn nice little knee bar setup. Then he goes out against Daniel Barres, gets knocked down, which is a little problematic. But Alan Nascimento ain't throwing punches standing, so you don't got to worry about it here. And then, but he subs Barres out with 3 minutes, like in 3 minutes, which is fairly nice. Barres, not a world beater, but solid for a round and a half. So to choke him out in 3 minutes and 20 seconds, nice. And then against Ode Osborne his last time out there, Ode Osborne also not a world beater, but a solid gatekeeper, a guy that's fought a wide variety of top flyweight challengers and generally gives a good account of himself. In that fight, Filho outstruck him 21-0, took him down on the lone takedown, and then easily was able to submit him also in the first round with a rear naked choke. I don't think he's going to sub Nascimento. But the problem with Nascimento is when he wins, he beats Carlos Hernandez, 3 minutes and 16 seconds, but he only landed 6 strikes, right? Him against Jake Hadley, he wins by decision, but he only landed 19 strikes. I thought he got robbed against Tigir Ulembekov, but the reason he got robbed is because he was pretty much on his back the entire time fishing for submissions, and he only landed 25 significant strikes. I think that'll be his undoing. I think standing, Filho will just land a little bit more. And then if it does go to the ground, if Filo's on top, he's landing. You know, if he's able to out-wrestle you and take you down, he's going to be able to land. If you're on top of him, that's fine. But unless you're doing damage, the judges might not factor it in. And if you take him down and you hold him down and you guys are, the BJJ negates itself, not much is happening. He eventually gets back up and he lands a few more punches standing than you. You're still at risk of losing the round. So factored in with the 2.5 year long layoff, the 3 cancellations due to sickness and injury, the them having a pretty similar style, the him being low output, all of that factored in, it's a dog or pass fight. I wouldn't bet Nascimento at minus 150. If you flip the line, shit, dude, Nascimento's really good at BJJ, but it's not flipped. He's the favorite, and there's just way too many red flags for me to get behind that price. So if you're a smart guy, just pass altogether. You want no part. But if you got to make a pick, and I got to make a pick here, yeah, it could be the PRP line. Not quite sure how it's going to shake out. It'll be near the bottom, but I'm going to go with Jafel Filho to win this one.
Yeah, the 2.5 years is super, super concerning. And like, and on top of that, like going the full distance, you know, having that much, you know, not very much volume, but like takedowns, control time, everything like that, not really doing too much with it against Jake Hadley. If you're that good at jiu-jitsu, bit of a red flag. The Howley and Pavel fight, I mean, at this point, we're going back 7 years, right? Like the guy just has not been active during his prime, which is kind of crazy. I don't know exactly what's... Do you know? Have you seen any? Like, why is he pulling out of all these fights? What is going on with Alan Nascimento?
Because, like, it's hard to say.
Because, like, his... Like, I was watching him versus Hernandez, and it was obviously done in 3 minutes and 16 seconds. But, like, you know, his entries to the takedowns, his transitions to dominant positions, and everything was just so elite. Such like a masterpiece. Carlos Hernandez,
not good.
He's a good enough grappler, unless he's outmatched in the grappling department. In which case, it gets like super, super ugly. And he was certainly outmatched in that matchup. Nascimento sub has kind of been calling my name, but I don't know if I'm going to get to it. It's like plus 350. He's just so good that maybe he gets there. But credit where credit's due. It took Makhachev almost 14 minutes to get to the neck or get the finish in that fight. I'll lean Nascimento, but it's like another fight that I actually don't have any anticipate that I'll get to from a betting perspective. Moving on down, we got Macy Chason taking on Ketlin Vieira. Macy Chason a -118 favorite. The comeback on Ketlin Vieira, -102. Your thoughts?
Yeah, honestly, I have no idea. I'm going with Macy Chason, but I don't think that there's any great angle or great opinion from me on why I'm taking Macy Chason. It just seems to me like maybe Chason's always had the proportions. She's big, she's long, she fought on the Ultimate Fighter at 145 pounds. She's one of the girls that could have probably competed at 145 had that weight class actually remained a real thing. But yeah, it's just like, you know, similar to a lot of tall kids growing up or some of these like long, a giraffe, they don't really figure out their coordination quite all that quickly. And in her case, it's like she never really just blended her style together. She can grapple, she can strike, but largely the fluidity is what's missing, and her ability to transition from one of her arts to one of the others, it's just not really there. And as a result, she at times just appears to be clunky. At her best, she can throw up high volume, she's big, she's physical, her cardio checks out. At her worst, she's got durability issues, she's got massive ring IQ issues. Not someone that I would normally go out there and recommend, like, gotta have money on Macy Chason. But yeah, against Ketlin Vieira, Ketlin's in much of the same spot. I struggle to find what Ketlin Vieira does really well. It's like her grappling is okay, but it's largely just stalling you out. You know, similar to a big Norm, Norma Dumont. It's like they're big and they're strong. Her, Norm, Chason, they all kind of have the same thing. They're big, they're strong, but there's not a whole lot coming. There's not a whole lot of athleticism. There's not a whole lot of explosiveness. There's not, you know, high degree of technique. When she's at her best, she looks okay. She can throw up some technique. She can throw up some volume. The Misha Tate fight, she lands 113 significant strikes, but she got outworked and out volume by an old Misha Tate. Red flag. Her versus Holly Holm, she had won a split decision. I thought she lost that split decision. Oh, Holly Holm, an old Holly Holm, the old Matador. Raquel Pennington, she loses a split. Should have been unanimous. The Pani Kianzad fight, she landed 15 significant strikes over 15 minutes. She's just trying to spam grappling the entire time, and I cannot get behind that. So when I look at Macy Chason, it's like, okay, spam the takedowns on her. She has a 70% takedown defense. You know, Mara Buena Silva, high-level BJJ black belt, strong physical fighter, someone that fought for world title. She's able to keep the fight standing, out grapple her, bust her open with a nasty, nasty cut above the eyebrow. You know, really put in some solid work. Her own fight with Pani Kianzad prior to that, she takes Pani Kianzad down twice, ends up taking her back and catching her in a rear naked choke. I can't use MMA math and said one of them held down Pani and actually got outstruck 22-15. Just garbage. The other one submitted her. Like, I'm not using MMA math. I'm saying Chason's hitting a bit of a rhythm where she's figuring out how to strike, how to land those big devastating elbows, how to mix in her technique, and then also grapple if need be. And I think that should be enough. Ketlin's going to try to press her up against the cage. Ketlin's going to try to get takedowns. I think early, Ketlin probably does get one or two. The longer this thing goes, Chason's going to stuff those takedowns, outwork her, squeak out a tight decision. So could be a split, could be unanimous. Don't care. As long as Macy Chason gets her hand raised at the end of it, I will take her. But as you can tell, the confidence is not super high, but Chason will be the pick.
Yeah, I'm with you. One of the results that like really kind of like made me really laugh, cringe, whatever over the years was the upkick from her back.
Aldana.
Yeah. I was just like, that one. She was like winning Macy, until then. That one with Macy was just like, I don't know if I can ever trust this girl.
Yeah, that's
like fair. After that happened, I'm like, I don't know if I could ever trust this girl. But then when I was getting ready for this show, I went and watched Vieira versus Aldana, and Aldana sent her to the damn shadow realm. So I was just like, yeah, we got to go with Macy for a lot of the same reasons that you said. I think she's just like heading in the right direction. They're both the same age. Like Macy tends to throw a little bit more volume. I mean, credit where credit's due. Macy took down Big Norm 6 times and held her. And, like, you seen the caboose?
Yeah. Big Norm? I love checking at the caboose on Big Norm. Come on.
It's hard to hold that girl down like that. I'm not saying that she's going to do that to Vieira, but, like, I don't know. Vieira hits less violently. I think her best little run was three or four years ago. And even during that best run, you know, she had a Janos Santos fight where she had three takedowns and four. But it's like, you know, beating Misha Tate and Holly Holm during that period of time. It looks good on paper, but mm-hmm. it's like, let's face it, they mm-hmm. were, both of them were probably way past their prime. I remember like that was like, you know, Ketlin's getting into, you know, title conversation and everything like that after those wins. Well, it's like those, there wasn't too much tread on the tire for those two opponents at this point. So I'm with you. It's Macy Chase on for me as well. We've got Andreas Gustafsson taking on Trevin Giles. Gustafsson, a minus 155 favorite. Giles can be had for plus 155. I'll be kind of quick about this one. From range, I think Giles is the better striker. Don't get me wrong. It's all going to come down to how Gustafsson wins most of his fights. And that's barreling you up against the cage and just being way more physical, way more rough, really, really aggressive and violent, frankly, in the clinch. That Pitlick fight on Contender Series was pretty nasty. Like, there was a hematoma on Pitlick's face and everything like that. So I was looking for like situations. It's like watching the Malott fight. Credit, like we like Mike Malott around these parts here, but that wasn't the fight to really find the tape I was looking for in this type of matchup. Carlos Prata's fight before that, not really the fight that you're gonna see standing cage control. There's the Parsons fight. There's a lot of standing cage control in that fight that I think Andreas Gustafsson can have some success in those ranges. The Bonfim fight was kind of done so early, but there was a moment where Bonfim, after he like rocks Giles, he's able to like grab under hooks, control him against the cage and drags him to the mat. It's just like, I did see on tape the ability for opponents to do what I expect Gustafsson, because he does it in like 99% of his fights, outside of like fights in like, you know, the Swedish regional scene where he's just able to run across and just knock the guy's head off. But he wants to get you up against the cage, and he uses standing cage control as a weapon. He's a little bit of a new breed in that respect. But Gustafsson for me, Gustafsson by knockout could be interesting. It's a pink slips fight for Trevin Giles. Like, his job is on the line at this point. Your thoughts?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I thought Trevin Giles retired after his last fight. Fights him a lot. It's a awful fight. I mean, talk about a bad fight, but he's the loser of said bad fight. Doesn't do anything. It puts him on a 3-fight losing streak. It puts him to, I think, 2-5 over his last 7 fights. He's a cop in San Antonio. He's got a really good job. And I believe I seen an interview where he was like, yeah, well, this is it kind of thing. I think he's a sergeant as well, for the record, with the police force. So like, I just fully assumed Giles is out. And then Gustafsson's booked to fight Jeremiah Wells. Jeremiah Wells, this is not even a full camp, Trevin Giles. This is 3-fight losing streak. Yeah, 3-fight. The fight got booked like a week ago. So how do you go from 3-fight losing streak, super disinterested, just got beat by Mike Malott in an uninspiring go, working a full-time job that's time-consuming, to I have the opportunity to take a fight short notice and jump in there with Gustafsson? Like, I really don't know. And then the thing for Andreas Gustafsson is he has his first amateur fight at 27. And he turns pro at 28, but he had 11 amateur fights. Like, he wrestled a little bit Greco-Roman in Sweden. And I think that's why he had a late start to MMA. But since he's been in MMA, the guy's a hell on wheels. He just competes as much as he can. As Paul mentioned, he just darts across the ring and beats the crap out of you. Like, he's the closest thing to like a real Viking that I've seen in a very long time. This guy's an absolute madman, but he's 34 years old now, making his official UFC debut. That would be the knock on him, is that like, he needs to win fights, and he needs to win them in spectacular fashion and right away, because 2 years from now, 3 years from now, when you finally get that big long win streak together, you're all of a sudden 36 years old, 35, 36, 37 years old. So he's kind of fighting father time a little bit, not saying he's old, just saying it's old to be making an official UFC debut. That being said, Trevin Giles just doesn't get like getting roughed up. That's the bottom line. Because I've watched this guy compete in jiu-jitsu tournaments because he's a black belt. And it's like once he gets taken down, he accepts positions. As far as him being in the UFC, it's like he's got a good jab on him. Throws it from the hip side. It's straight. It's accurate. It's got some speed on it. He can keep guys at bay. What happened in the Carlo Prates fight is that Carlos stands in front of him and just watches him touch him. He did it against Ian Gary. That should have been a red flag, but it doesn't matter. He sits there and he watches you hit him with that jab. He sits there and he watches, reads some information, then decides, I'm going to explode with my own offense. Well, Gustafsson doesn't do that. He's not going to sit there and let you jab him in the face. He's going to press forward. If he can take you down, great. If not, he doesn't have a freestyle or a folk style of wrestling. He has a Greco-Roman style, which means he's totally fine just getting a single underhook or a single collar tie and just battering you. You haven't really seen guys do it since like Randy Couture or Matt Linlin or those like hardcore Team Quest guys from back in the day. Don Fry used to do it a little bit back in the day. That is what this man's going to do. He doesn't need the takedown. He's just going to press you up against the cage and beat the crap out of you. Now, what Torrence Finney does is press you up against the cage, but he doesn't beat you up. What this guy does is press you up against the cage and then land a ton of volume. And what I'm telling you is I don't want to see anybody else do it because it's not the kind of thing you'd want to see in every fight. But it's a very, very effective style. If you're physically strong enough to just pit a guy against the cage, where can he go? Where can he go, Paul? You don't even have to take the guy down where you run the risk of him getting back up and you exert energy. You don't even need to take him down. You can just push him up against the cage. Cardio seems to be there. I do believe he's a bit of a slow starter, but once he finds that, that pace and that rhythm, he just is relentless with it. And I think he puts it on Trevin Giles. Trevin Giles hasn't been finished since Bavon Lewis.
He got finished by Bonfim.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, he got finished by Bonfim. And Carlos Prates knocked him. What the hell was I looking at? Oh, I was looking at his wins. My bad. Yeah, he hasn't finished anybody in 4 years. In terms of him being finished, he's been finished in 4 of his last 5 losses. Dracus Duplessis TKOs him in the second. Michael Morales knocks him out in the first. Gabriel Bonfim choked him out in the first. Carlos Prates knocks him out in the second. I would suggest that a version of him that's now a little bit older, he's got a full-time job, he's on a 3-fight losing streak, pink slip fight or not, his body doesn't love that pressure. His body doesn't love those greedy wars, and Gustafsson's going to put that on him. So I'm going to double down on what Paul's saying and take a little sprinkle on a Gustafsson by TKO prop as well.
Boom. Very rare. Very rare for Cody to... It worked out. What was the fight that worked out? Not that long ago. We were both on Dan Ige by KO, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We've done a few times. Like, I take too many of these damn props. Like, I will be honest. I'm a little bit too, I take too many of them. Cody takes, the safe.
Not enough.
You take the safer approach with what happens and what's going on in mixed martial arts more often, which is people find ways to extend these fights. I just see the big numbers and I get excited. we've had pretty good history when we're on the same page with these type of things. I just think he's too physical for Giles, who, coming off the couch, it's a catch weight of some sort. I don't have the exact number in front of me right now, but there's a lot of things that would lead me to believe that maybe Trevin's just here to catch a paycheck. All these fighters have heart and they're warriors and everything like that. But
Gustafsson looks like the kind of guy that Trevin Jones has probably encountered on the street in his work as a police officer a few times. The difference there is that he's got a gun, cuffs, pepper spray, walkie-talkie to call him for some backup, and straight up cage pitted it against this man. That's a tough go, man. That's a tough go. He's real strong.
100%. All right, we got Jones. Speaking of maybe not so strong, we got Jordan Leavitt taking on Kurt Hollebaugh here. And looking at the numbers, my initial thought was just like, I'm going to love Kurt Hollebaugh here, aren't I? And it's just like, not so much. Not nearly as much as I thought I was going to love him. Watching the tape, and I was just... It really comes down to it. Kurt's just too happy to hang out on his back. Mm-hmm. Watching both of their Trey Ogden fights, there's a massive difference in those fights. Since Jordan's at least like competing in these exchanges, whereas Kurt is really, really, Jordan Leavitt is able to outstrike him in that fight. 69 nights to 41. Has 5 minutes of control time. Big difference when you look at Trey Ogden right here taking on Kurt Hollabaugh. And it's like, what, 12 minutes of control time, I believe. Oh, I clicked on Kurt by accident there. Let's click on that fight. 11 minutes of control time. Kurt's just like kind of like fishing for like guillotine attempts that just are never going to happen. But Kurt, when he is on the feet, I do think throws with a little bit better volume. He can make it close. He can make it greasy. So I did take fight ends in by split decision. I think more often than not, Jordan Leavitt gets his hand raised. But I'm going to side with Leavitt. Even though I don't love his game, I don't love his style. He'll be the pick for me just because of Hollabaugh being Hollabaugh. But fight ends in split decision. I tipped it at like plus 550. It moved to plus 500. Now it's plus 400. See where it opens up at other places over the course of the week. But kind of got away from us. But c'est la vie. I see that. Like, I think this fight does have lots of ways to be a greasy kind of split. It's like, Leavitt controls for periods of time, but like Hollabaugh's able to like get back to his feet, lands a few strikes at the end of the round, and it's one of those types of fights. But Leavitt control time, sadly, nobody there to boo him and get the stand-ups faster. I think that could be a big factor. What's your take here?
Yeah, I'm actually on the same page. I think Leavitt wins the fight. Initially, again, when fights get announced, there's always a first thing that pops to your head. And first thing that pops to my head is it'll be underdog money for Kurt Hollabaugh. And Kurt Hollabaugh's more of a dog. Like, he's a real fighter. When you're talking about this is not a fighter versus a fighter. It's a fighter versus a grappler. Hollabaugh's a dog. Hollabaugh's a guy that's going to come forward. He's going to swing. He could be down a couple rounds. He's throwing. BJJ, black belt, Wiley, someone that is generally entertaining to watch. If you're not even a gambler, you're just a fight fan, you like turning these fights on, watching what's going to happen, Hollabaugh's a guy that's going to entertain you. Leavitt's mostly just glue on you. He's not physical. He's got like a rinky-dink style, leg kick, leg kick, leg kick, leg kick, leg kick, frustrates you, and then all of a sudden it's just like, just shoot, try to get some good timing on a takedown, nice technique, trip you to the ground. And then just staple you down to the mat. I mean, he's got good BJJ. He floats on of opponents. I don't say I don't like watching the guy. I'm saying for fight fans, you know, it's more of a pure traditional jiu-jitsu style. And I just don't think that there's a whole lot of love for it. And then when he does win, you know, he's twerking in your face.
I saw an interview with Helen Yee where he said he's not, because he's like a distinguished adult now. He's like, that was me in my 20s. I'm not gonna twerk anymore. We'll see if he holds true to that.
Yeah, I mean, like, I get it, but it's got to be always time and place. Like that dumb broad Vanessa Demopoulos. I don't mind you jumping into the commentator's arms and doing your little stripper thing.
Eileen Perez. It was actually a funny interview.
Eileen Perez with the
it was a funny interview. He's just like, I walked so opponent. You could run, Eileen. I was the first twerker in the U. It was actually pretty funny. Like, I appreciate, like, it was pretty well delivered.
I liked it too. And then, like, when he fought Patty Pimblett, like, Patty chokes him out and then Patty twerks in his face, you know? So it's like, it draws up some support. There's 757 fighters active on the roster. How are you going to differentiate yourself and distinguish yourself from some of these other guys? Now, that is twerking a thing. No, it's weird, but it's the little things that just help separate you. So he had a little thing. Oh, just what I'm saying is, Joe, go and finish a guy in spectacular fashion, and then do your little jig. Remember Ryan Gimo, the late great Ryan Gimo, killed in a hit and run, but he would do the robot, and it was sick. But he had to knock you out to do the robot. He was a bit of a decision machine, but when eventually he would knock somebody out, you'd get the robot out of it, dude. It was sick. I miss that guy. I really do. I don't know what fight we're talking about. Jordan Leavitt. Yeah, okay. So for Jordan Leavitt, twerk or not, he's been off for almost 2 years. Like, he hasn't fought since November 2023. And I think that still at only 29 years old, it'll have done some good. He spends all of his time in Las Vegas, Syndicate MMA. Sometimes I think goes to Extreme here and there to get some rounds in. But he's fighting at the Apex, somewhere that he basically spends all of his time in Vegas. He'll be fine. He's not old. He's not over the tooth. Even though he's not physically strong, he's good at creating scrambles. And in those scrambles, if he's a better grappler than you, he will end up on top. Now, Hollabaugh is a black belt, but Hollabaugh owns his own gym. He's teaching the classes himself. He's got a small little group of training partners that he trusts and he does good with, but he's not in some big, huge room. He's not used to fighting a guy necessarily that's younger than him and faster than him and a better grappler than him that's going to stick to that. But Holloway's always had the same problem. Alexander Hernandez in his last fight just spammed those takedowns at the end to get himself out of trouble. Got four of them. Him versus Kanan Krzyzewski took him down three times. Trey Ogden took him down three times. Austin Hubbard took him down twice. Thiago Moises took him down four times. Burgos did not take him out. Burgos just subbed him with the first round armbar instead. Rowney Barcelos took him down three times. Steven Seiler took him down. And then my boy, Pat Healy, that's a Strikeforce fight way back when. Pat Healy, a total dog. But he's always getting taken down. Always. If you tire, he's more of a dog than you. He'll beat you in those later rounds. But Levitt doesn't have a bad gas tank. If you have low ring IQ and you can just get drawn into this brawl, he can take advantage of it. Levitt's a pretty smart guy. I think Levitt just rinky-dinks him with a few leg kicks like he did to Trey Ogden. Have this guy come forward. When this guy comes forward reckless, or when he comes forward frustrated, or when he makes that small mistake, you shoot a low single on him. And whereas Levitt's low single is not all that good, what it's going to do is going to offset the balance from Kurt Holloba, create a scramble, and then the younger, faster guy is going to end up on top, and that's going to be Levitt. So, yeah, I think Levitt wins at least two of these three rounds and wins a decision overall.
Yeah, sounds boring, but
it will be
split decision, like, because I'll be like, yes, or hopefully somebody just, you know, messes it up. Give Kurt a chance.
Kurt's last fight against Hernandez, he showed up looking like Butch from the TV show Recess, the cartoon. And everybody knows Butch seen some shit. It looked like Kalaba's got one streak of white hair, a little bit older, runs his own team. Yeah. I mean, would you like to see him win? No, because I'm going to have money against him. But is he the kind of guy you can root for as one of the good guys of the sport? Yeah, of course. I wish him none the best after this fight.
Yeah. I could see it being close, just on like physicality and stuff like that. That's why I bet fight ends in split decision for that very reason. All right, we got Balaji Oki taking on Markel Medeiros. Oki is a -175 favorite. The comeback on Medeiros +150. Who you got here?
Yeah, I took Balaji Oki. Balaji Oki is just green, you know? He's only got 11 pro fights, so he's going to be prone to make mistakes. But athletically, I mean, he's fast. He's got decent footwork. He's got some okay power in his hands. I feel like the volume is there. It's that back in the day, back when you remember how it was, Paul, back when you first start watching fights, it's like guys would debut in the UFC with like 20 fights under their belt, 15 fights under their belt. So these guys would usually be in their mid-20s, late 20s. Maybe early 30s, and they just had a wealth of experience. Now you're getting a lot of these guys that'll win on the contender series without the most fights under their belt, and then either you're on the Ultimate Fighter, or you just get a contract directly through DWCS from Dana, and you get right into the UFC. But you're seeing a lot of guys that are physically just learning on the job. I think Oki could be a good fighter, but he's going to be prone to be making a lot of mistakes. His fight on the contender series, he took a guy named Dylan Salvador. Dylan Salvador's got excellent Muay Thai. He's a really, really good striker, and Oki, man, he's fast. Oh, man, this guy's fast. He's dynamic when he needs to be. He's got that forward pressure, and he's got God-given power in both of his hands. So I believe him to probably be a decent prospect. Bet him against Timmy Kwamba. He outstruck Kwamba 60-33. They both had a takedown each. He didn't look great. Kwamba's been in Las Vegas for 10 years himself. He's not a bad fighter, not a good fighter, but not a bad fighter. And Oki wins a split. It should have been a unanimous, but all the same, it's like, that's where you do see that greenness to him. And then, of course, in his last fight, which is his first loss in the UFC, Chris Duncan. Yeah.
Fell into the same mistake
twice. But he's otherwise kicking his ass standing, which counts for something. And he makes a stupid decision, and he does it twice, which you can't say unforgivable because he's young and he's learning. But certainly, if you're going to just be a fan out of the UFC type guy, then you won't learn from a mistake like that. If you're going to be young, one of these guys. No, I know. That's what 30. I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. He's got to start tying these things together, right? He's young in that he's only got 10 pro fights. Not young physically. He's mature physically. Sorry. He's got that athleticism. It's just that his skills aren't refined. He makes poor decisions. That fight with Duncan, he's lighting him up standing. He takes him down. He almost gets guillotined. He gets back up. He's still doing fine standing. Then he shoots again. Now, kudos to him. He never tapped. He went in like a gangster. So, because I'm betting money on him, I can appreciate that he's willing to die if need be to potentially help me cash a ticket. So I'm down with that. But of course, he needs to just work on developing a proper game plan, fighting a little bit more patient, putting all of his skills together. And then I think athletically, He's got all the parts. It's just he really does need to get some development. Markel Medeiros, this is a perfect fight for him in that Markel's also fairly inexperienced in that he only has a few extra fights in him. He's only a year younger than him. They're relatively at that same spot, but he just doesn't have that same athletic tools. He's not nearly as fast. He's not nearly as explosive. I don't think he's got that same amount of power. But I would say in his fight with Isakov, sure, he knocks him out. Kind of a weird fight. Landon Quinones, they go a lot of back and forth. Both guys have their moments. Both guys lands. I feel like Oki could thrive in that type of fight. But it's that last fight with Austin Hubbard. I took a dog shot on Hubbard. I believe, yeah, you had the dog shot on Hubbard too. And then Hubbard won, honestly. I can see the numbers, 44-26.
But I also had the split decision prop on that fight. So
dope fight to take a split in because Hubbard fights those type of fights. But Hubbard is the opposite of an athletic specimen. He's a go-getter, but he's slow. He's plodding. And he was able to mix in two takedowns, get some control time. And largely, Medeiros just really couldn't hurt him. He really couldn't get much going. He was able to out-volume very slightly, but I just thought he looked real stiff and rigid. Now, it's only his second fight in the UFC. Of course, he's getting better, but he's 29. Like, I just don't rate him as a prospect. I don't rate him as anything special. Oki, I get he's 30. I get that he's probably not going to be a top five guy ever, but he could be one of these guys that, like a Manel Kopp, just ends up being a real big problem for guys because he's got big power in his hands. His takedown defense gets to a certain level, and he fights a solid pace, you know, picks his spots, frustrates opponents, capitalizes. If Oki can start to tie things together, I think he's got Markel Medeiros' number here. So I will pick him to get the job done. But with guys that are just still figuring it out and they got low ring IQ, you can never be super confident on them. But I like what I see at Oki. I'm just going to chalk up that Duncan fight to a bad mistake. Let's fix that. Let's correct that. Come in even better this time around.
Yeah, not much to add there. Pick for me is Oki. Violence upside. Number seems a little bit short on like his KO prop. Because it's not hard. It's not easy to get Medeiros out of there. He was knocked out in like 2019. Again, some absolute nobody, but it's like you can't really ever go back like 7 years and be like, that's going to happen again. Yeah. I mean, Oki could definitely do it. But yeah, it's like plus 250. The over 2.5 is like minus 175. I was just like, that's not a generous KO prop. They're definitely squeezing you. They're squeezing you on some of these props these days, Cody. So I'm having to get a little bit less. I can't just be firing at a bunch of this stuff anymore because, like, yeah, minus 175 to the over 2.5, and you're giving a plus 250 on a KO prop. That's grease, man. That's grease. You know it. You know it should be more than that. So can't really take that. But yeah, Oki, I think Oki would probably be at his best if he goes back to what got him to the dance here on Contender Series. It's just like, you're 30. You don't have much time to waste. You know, going out there and going tit for tat with Timmy Kwamba, it's like, that's not the path, bro. Go out there and just try to nuke fools. Go try to kill or die in the process. Become a fan favorite. And don't fight in the apex moving forward. I feel like he's just like a physical specimen that works for him. Let's not fish around on the ground. Let's not try to go into anybody's guard and be tricky. Medeiros is the right type of matchup for him to just go out there, swang and bang. Maybe he gets the finish, but either way, I think that he did impress me in the Kwamba fight. That it's like his cardio definitely held up in round three. That was the one thing I really took away. But I'm like, this guy does have 3-round cardio. He hits hard. Both these guys are pretty low volume. I just think the bigger strikes, the better strikes, the more convincing strikes when it goes to the scorecards would be for Bellagioki. So I'm on that side with you. Finally, we got Rayon Amanda Dos Santos taking on Alice Ardeline. Ardelian, Cody's favorite TikToker and Instagram account, I've been told.
Yeah, are you asking me? No,
you're on the spot, bro.
I don't even think you knew about her TikTok celebrity status.
You complained about it last time.
I know.
Last time we were on the show. So I made sure to look at it this time. It was little bit less weird. It was a little bit less weird this time. You know, maybe she's got more eyeballs on her, so she's been a little bit less strange.
How many followers does she have?
You know, off the top of my head, I didn't keep track, but
well, I'll be honest,
I can effort that right now.
Yeah, I don't have a TikTok. I don't even have an Instagram. I mean, it's mostly just Twitter.
There was like a sausage. There was a sausage bit, like she was like filling meat into a sausage tube. It was weird.
The weird thing is
684,000 Instagram followers.
Yeah, I was gonna guess 650 based on the last time we had
people are into it.
Yeah, people
that,
are
that,
into
that
it.
Says something more about humanity than anything else.
I'll tell you what tells you more about humanity is that a lot of her content is like sexual in nature, sexual innuendos, and yet she's gross, man. Like, I don't know why would 650,000 plus people be into this? No idea. But so I've been told the weird thing is it's like why so many girls do OnlyFans is like it doesn't matter if you are 600 pounds and have one leg and are bald. Apparently there's a market for that. So there's a market for Ertang. And she's just figured out what her market is. So kudos to her. Now, would she be fighting in the UFC if she didn't have the big following? I really don't know. They got her as the very first fight on the card on a shitty Apex card. So it's not like they're trying to promote her. It's not like there's anything long term. She's 0-2 in the UFC at this point. It's just, yeah, why not? Why not? Maybe she can promote it for us on her TikTok. She's a natural candidate for Power Slap. So maybe she'll go check that out afterwards. But yeah, could she win this fight? As gross as this sounds, like, yeah, yes. In theory, she could absolutely win this fight. I'm going with Ryan Dos Santos, but Ryan Dos Santos is an apple pie shitter. Her style is super subjective. It's very close. It usually goes the full 15 minutes. It's very, very contentious. She's lost her two fights in the UFC as well, so they're both 0-2. But Ryan lost both of hers by split decision. And I thought she maybe won both of those fights. Certainly that fight with Puyo Tomar, I thought she won round 2 and 3. But it's just tit for tat. And she's a black belt. Her husband's a black belt. Like 3 or 4 of the family members are also black belts. And like she doesn't even try to take the fight to the ground, Paul. In the Tomar fight, she couldn't even take the fight to the ground. So there's just so many red flags. Now Ryan Dos Santos, at her best, she's 105-pounder. She's a former Invicta champ at atomweight, 105 pounds. There's no 105 pounds in the UFC, so she's forced to fight up at 115. And at 115, it's just not it. Her strikes have no power on it. Her ability to offensively wrestle, like, she's just not strong enough. And so a lot of the time, it's mostly standing, and it's subjective. Her black belt is supposed to be okay. You look at that fight with Talita Alencar, who actually is a good grappler. Yeah, defensively, Dos Santos can grapple. I'm not worried about that. It's that why not try to mix in some takedowns and some offensive jiu-jitsu in these close fights? She just doesn't. I'd like to say it's because she's inexperienced in that. No, it's not. It's not. She's one of these I have bad ring IQ fighters, and it doesn't really get much better. So to pick her, especially as a slight favorite, slight favorite, my bad. She's like a giant favorite. It just doesn't scream good. So why not go with CF Dot model again? Well, because the other side to that is the Elise Ardeline. And I'm just not big on Ardeline. I mean, she gets their fight with Shauna O'Bannon. She got fairly outstruck, but it's mostly just a touch and go style. She just can't make any reads on her. And then her last time out, not that it was like the worst performance out there against Melissa Martinez. I thought she did win the first round. She does the same thing that she does against Bannon. The first round's not bad. The second and the third round, she just gets lost. Or her opponents figure her out because there's no versatility to her game. There's no depth to it. So it's just the same thing coming. It's the same reads. It's the same rhythm. It's the same, you know, pretty well everything. So they just kind of do figure her out. I feel like Ryan is going to throw a little bit more. I feel like Ryan hopefully fights a better game plan for the first time. And I feel like Ryan, who's been training and competing for 15 plus years, it's got to be better than a girl that picked up the sport in her late 20s, cardio kickboxing as a way to lose weight and get in shape. Like, she's not a real athlete. She's not that tough of a fighter. Her regional show career was very uneventful. But yeah, she got 650,000 followers on TikTok. So I guess that's enough to get a fight in the UFC. So, I don't know. And then the sad thing is, shit, she could still win. Absolutely, she could win. Shauna O'Bannon fight was a split. Weird. The Melissa Martinez fight. Melissa Martinez is David Martinez's sister, right? So, I don't know. Honestly, I guess I got a bad gut feeling that for whatever reason, Ryan does what Ryan always does and just blows it. It's a super close fight. She doesn't do enough. She's massively complacent. She goes through the motions. She keeps it tight. Ardeline, you want to go back against the wall. She got nothing to lose. Like, she's already got a social media following. She's already got money. She's 0-2 in the UFC. She's a 3-1 underdog. She's just going to come out aggressive and just do a little bit more. And doing a little bit more in the apex where there's no fans screaming and there's nothing going on, oftentimes that gets the nod from the judges. So I've seen Ryan lose two close splits. I seen Ardeline be competitive with one of her fights being a split. This thing's got split written all over it. And one of them is a 3-1 favorite. So I don't know. Dogger. I want to take Ryan because I think she wins, but the value just seems so atrocious that I almost just want to Ardeline for the PRP pick almost, but really juice things up. But also that's where you would put her. If you're betting around at all, hit a single. If you want really want to get greasy on it, okay, it could juice up a long shot parlay for a few bucks. But this is that level of MMA that you don't really need to have action on because it doesn't seem like there's any type of great side. Again, we got a weigh-in show and a prop show coming up on Friday. If I can find a prop I like on this, I will attack it from that standpoint. But it would seem like it's either the prop is if you're taking Ardeline, take her by decision. It'd be even better. If you're taking Ryan, take her by decision because that would be a lot better than the 3-1. If you just want to take fight go to decision or the over 2.5, the number's awful. So, you know, you're still taking risk. First fight of the card, whatever. Could rebuild, but I'd hate to rebuild losing on a fight like this to open things up. So, yeah, I'll take Ryan. I'm not stupid. But we'll see about that on the recap show Sunday, because if Ardeline comes through, I'm going to be so pissed off.
It's at the bottom. Anybody who watches the show knows that you hate it. You hate it. So much. You don't have to put a minus 285 up the thing if you absolutely hit her. Here's the thing for me, man. If you lose to the Pooja Tomar, so I'm not laying minus 300 on you. I don't care. And I actually liked Ryan Ryan Dos Santos when she came to the UFC. Like, I cashed some tickets over on Invicta with her, and I had high hopes. And the move up to 115 just hasn't really suited her well. But, like, yeah, losing to the Pooch. But both of the fights were close enough that, like, maybe she could have got the nub, but she didn't. But, like, now they're asking me to pay minus 300 nearly on that. I just can't get to it. It's CF dot model. It's dog or pass. But part of the CF dot model is the P at the end. Like, you don't necessarily have to bet this fight. It will be a pass for me because we've got so many cards this week. I've been taping Brave CF, which is on Friday. Off the coast, it's in Tenerife, which is like it's in the Spain. Canary Islands, which is off the coast from Spain. So that's going on. There's a Cage Warriors card with like 17 fights. I got to finish up some of my tape for the Brave CF. Then there's Cage Warriors. There's two Canadian regional cards. There's like a Rising card. I don't know if we're going to get to that. And there's like BKB, which people in the Discord seem to like. But it's like
Fight Pass Invitational on Thursday.
Oh, are you getting in on that too? Like, I mean, the week's just started here for us. So, yeah, Alice Ardeline, Ryan Demanda, not getting any of my money this week. But Cody, we're just about out of time. Before we go, in with the PRP.
PRP time. We're going with Macy Barber, dog number one. Matheus Gamrot. We're going to go with Billy Ray to not break my achy breaky heart. We're going to go with Dustin Jacoby, Zach Reese, Jafel Filho would be dog number two. Macy Chason, kind of even money. Andreas Gustafsson, Jordan Levitt, Balaji Oki, and Ryan Dos Santos. Keep in tune for that one. Moving parts, man. Moving parts. Got to watch weigh-ins. But it doesn't seem like I got a ton of underdogs. That being said, it's an 11-fight card. And quite frankly, if Barber came through as an underdog and Jafello came through as an underdog, like I'd be pretty cool with that. I wouldn't need anything else. I'd be happy. I'd be happy with that. So yeah, that's it. As Paul mentioned, there's a zillion other things going. So if we can parlay some of these fights that we really like with some of those fights that we really like, maybe that's the way that I'm going to try to approach this weekend.
Make a sweet looking pie.
Yes.
There's just so much. Yeah. There's so much on the go every single week that you don't have to force it all at the UFC, or at least we don't have to, because we're looking into all this stuff every single week and it's fun. You know, just because the UFC doesn't go well for you, there's other things, or, you know, the road to the UFC, we were doing very, very well. Had a couple of roadblocks there, but Saturday, there was FCR, there was LFA Brazil, and all of a sudden, I'm like, this turned into a great week. So, the grind never stops. We're having a good time over there in the Discord. If you want more from us, you know, links in the description, everything like that. If you don't, we will see you next week for, I don't even know which card it is next week, but I think it's a big one. But anyway, that is it for us this week. Hope you enjoyed the show. For Cody, I'm Paul, saying goodbye. Good luck.